The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like, you can send us mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat underground and independent literature. A link to Firestorm's partial catalog of books and zines, and also a full link to their schedule of events can be found online at their website at firestorm.coop. This week on the show, we are featuring an interview with Panioti, who is an anti-prison activist working on a campaign to fight toxic prisons, which is mobilizing around and protesting the building of a new federal prison in Lester County, Kentucky. We are talking about general anti-prison organizing, and we're also talking about the fast approaching convergence which the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prison, or FTP, will be holding in Washington, D.C. from June 11th through the 13th. If you'd like to learn more about this campaign, you can visit their very comprehensive website at fighttoxicprisons.org.
After the Panioti segment, we feature an interview with Ben Turk, conducted by members of the Prison Radio Show Collective at CKUT on the campus of McGill University in Montreal, Quebec, in Canada, about the prison strikes across the U.S. and the buildup towards calls for the general prisoner strike on the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising on September 9th of 2016. Ben will be talking about the rising of strikes by prisoners throughout Texas, followed by the increase of struggles at different facilities by the Free Alabama Movement and other prisoners in Alabama, and also solidarity strikes in other parts of the country, work and food strikes. Quick announcement, I'd also like to share part of the crowdsourcing request from the U.S.-based English language insurrectional anarchist journal, Fire to the Prisons, which is asking for help in the publication of their 16th issue. In this request, FTTP describes the sorts of content it's covered and plans to cover, including wanting, quote, to expand our coverage, scope, and the reach of the publication while remaining true to the spirit of Fire to the Prisons. We will continue with our long-term commitment to counterinformation, original writing and content, and the amplification of anti-authoritarian, anti-prison, anti-repression struggle that you have come to expect from us, unquote. Quote, we are a committed collective. We are prepared to invest a lot of time and energy into producing this project, but we ask that all sympathetic readers help with the printing and distribution by donating to the funding page. To print 10,000 copies of this will cost $2,000 US. While in the past we've had to ask people to pay for the postage to our distributor, we'd like to be able to send out more copies for free to encourage broader distribution. So we're asking for another $2,000 for this. With maximizing our distribution efforts through contacts and friends across the world, we can distribute and mail almost all of the new issues to anyone interested in distributing it. This leads to us asking for $4,000. If you want to contribute to this campaign, you can go to generosity.com/fundraising/help-print-and-distribute-fire-2-the-prisons-13. Also, while I'd love to go into more detail, due to lack of time, I can't really, but check out itsgoingdown.org and their segment Block Party for updates on May Day celebrations around North America, including ways to support folks who were arrested and facing repression for it, as well as updates on some of the prisoner strikes in three facilities across Alabama at Holman, Atmore, and St. Clair, the usual troublemakers. You can also find out more details about that stuff at supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org. But from that block party segment, there are announcements on the June 12th birthday of Jared Chase of the NATO 3, who's been struggling with some health and legal hurdles of recent, as well as information about the upcoming June parole dates for longstanding Black liberation political prisoners Robert Seth Hayes and Jaleel Muntakin, with links to their support campaigns and more details on how to get them hopefully out. Also, a new mailing address for Joseph Buddington, recently sentenced to 2 years for non-cooperating plea for releasing thousands of minks from fur farms. We spoke about his case alongside Nicole Cassane a few months ago. Check out itsgoingdown.org for more details.
The first question I have is, will you mind introducing yourself for the radio and talk a bit about what you do?
Yeah, my name is Panayoti, and I'm an organizer with the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons. And I'm involved in planning this convergence coming up for around June 11th in D.C., specifically aimed at fighting the proposal for a new federal maximum security prison in East Kentucky, and connecting that with organizing work around supporting political prisoners and specifically people incarcerated for their environmental actions.
Mm-hmm. Is this the first time that you have participated in, like, anti-prison organizing?
No, I've actually, although I've primarily been an environmental organizer for in this past 20 years, I've always followed, you know, prison politics and movements around political prisoners specifically. Actually, in D.C., the Jericho March around freedom for political prisoners in the late 90s. So it feels a little bit interesting. For me, it's like a kind of coming full circle, working on this environmental campaign against prisons that's converging in D.C.
Yeah, it seems like an awesome mix of coalitions coming together and coming together to work against prison. I think that's really exciting. Like, on that tip, you mentioned the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons. Would you describe that campaign? How did it begin, and what are its aims? And I was wondering if you'd also talk about the campaign's political stance.
Yeah, the campaign is a relatively new project that grew out of a couple different organizing circles, and one of them being the Prison Ecology Project, which was born late 2014 out of the Human Rights Defense Center, which is the organization that publishes prison legal news. So I think the longest standing prisoner life publication that reports on prison struggles from inside, and also, you know, developments in prison policy and legal battles and legislative issues around prison, kind of all in one. Primary circulation is in prison. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the information for the Prison Ecology Project came from prisoners themselves. Much of the readership of prison legal news are jailhouse lawyers and people who follow, you know, what we viewed as environmental justice mm-hmm. issues, but in this context are being looked at as, you know, conditions of confinement issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we aim to connect those two worlds. And while I was working on that project last year, I came in contact with a lot of other organizations. I think all of whom felt like they were kind of struggling on a local level. So in Western Pennsylvania, the Abolitionist Law Center was fighting this campaign that was part of looking at the impact of coal ash at this coal ash dump, mm-hmm. which had a prison built right in the middle of it at SCI Fayette, which is in LaBelle, a small prison town. So it's people in the community and environmental groups fighting along with the prisoners and prisoner rights activists. And that became a sort of model for what was possible, you know, and some of the mutual relationships that could develop there, as well as some of the obstacles and lessons learned. So the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons actually grew out of that relationship with the Abolitionist Law Center mm-hmm. and communicating around the Prison Ecology Project that I was working on last year. Mm-hmm. We decided to kind of form a new focused effort on challenging a prison that was proposed in Eastern Kentucky, mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier,
which is in Letcher County and would be a maximum security federal prison. And it's going through the environmental impact statement right now. And so there's been a growing organizing effort to fight that. And that's where the campaign to fight toxic prisons came from. And it's specifically in aligning with the Abolitionist Law Center, it's using an abolitionist framework around looking at prisons.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I think that like you've touched on a lot of super important things about prison organizing, and one of things that I'd really love to talk with you more about is collaborations with a little bit more in depth with other groups, and also if you wouldn't mind touching on like what's called the like environmental racism which drives the building of prisons, and for those listeners who are not familiar with environmental racism, would you mind giving a brief rundown about what that is?
Yeah, we're certainly not the first effort to look at prisons in the context of environmental racism. And there's a pretty well-established history of organizing around that, usually around specific facilities more than like generalized organizations or movement building. But, you know, for example, critical resistance comes to mind. And when they were fighting a prison in California, in Kern County, it's the expansion of a facility called Delano. And they used challenges around environmental racism and environmental justice issues, coupled with, you know, conservation, kind of classic environmental type organizing, with looking at endangered species that were on the facility, on the site where the facility would be built. So that's, you know, another example of just this sort of work. And they did specifically develop some language around environmental racism in prisons. And for people who aren't familiar with that phrase, it comes from the environmental justice movement, which really established in the, you know, out of organizing throughout the 70s and 80s related to environmental health impacts. And some people point back to like Love Canal, for example, in the 70s, where a group of residents ended up taking EPA representatives hostage while they were addressing these extreme environmental health issues and demanding to be relocated from a site where they were stuck living in a contaminated zone. And so, you know, that was one example that really kind of caught a lot of attention, but really it was happening all over the country and almost exclusively, you know, lower income communities and predominantly or disproportionately communities of color were facing these industrial waste kind of exposure. And so, you know, they named that in one sense environmental racism because of how much it was impacting communities of color, but it also was headed up by people in low-income communities recognizing that they had this kind of unique stake in the environmental movement that in some ways was, you know, being ignored or dismissed by the, like, the big greens and the NGO kind of corporate environmental framework.
Definitely. Yeah, I myself grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, and there was a lot of both, like, resistance to and stakes within prison, meaning that like there was resistance to prison, which obviously like is perhaps self-explanatory in some ways, but the prison was one of the main employers for the community, and it's a historically a tiny town that was, you know, fell prey to the coal crash and never really recovered. So do you find any opposition in communities to these endeavors because people depend on them for their employment?
Yeah, there's definitely, an overlap or a connection with extraction industries and these like coal towns, but not just coal towns, really any in out west uranium towns or big agriculture where in these rural areas that all of a sudden boom with a prison town and the prison drastically changes the culture, but also like kind of hangs this prospect of jobs in front of people's faces in order to get, you know, approvals to move forward. And we're seeing that in Letcher County, you know, where people have been experiencing the impacts of coal mining for decades, you know, for a century there. And now that there's like the decline in coal industry, and it's come through a lot of struggle around impacts from coal and the global impacts of climate change. You know, I think there's like a lot of anxiety around being the ones to step up and say that we don't want these prison jobs either. And although that presence is there, I think in a lot of prison towns, there's people who kind of resent having a prison built. And but the economic exploitation that occurred in the community prior to the prison really paved the way for kind of silencing people and creating internal conflicts that, you know, that the prison pushers really exploit.
Definitely. Would you say that there's a pretty direct link between the prison industry and the extraction industry?
Yeah. I mean, there's even, I think, a good comparison to be made that really prison is an extraction industry. It extracts Definitely. People from their community, their home communities, and draws, you know, in this, in many cases, it draws them into these rural communities and turns them into kind of this weird commodities, like political commodities, and makes prisoners this sort of fodder for the whole like jobs versus the environment debate that happens after rural communities are torn apart by extraction industries.
And you mentioned a few of the collaborations that you are doing. Would you talk a little bit more about the collaborations?
You mean for the Convergence specifically, or Letcher County organizing, or all of it?
Whatever you think is the most important.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just bringing organizers together from, you know, anti-mass incarceration or prison abolition work, and people doing environmental organizing has been a pretty huge success in itself, just having that conversation, you know. And although oftentimes it's been some of the same people, we've like repeatedly found people saying, huh, I never really thought about doing this stuff together. Word. It's always been like, I do environmental activism and then I go to the, you know, prisoner solidarity rally. You know, maybe the overlap for several years was, you know, and I write letters to environmentalists in prison. And that for me was I think, a big part of the experience and the desire to build that, you know, with watching the Green Scare unravel. You know, I came into the anarchist movement in the midst of, you know, the kind of peak of underground direct action, you know, in the ELF style. Mm-hmm. And I was part of the Earth First movement organizing, and I still feel very connected to that movement. Mm-hmm. But in around 2005 and 2006, and this wave of indictments hit, and all of a sudden people that were like peers were getting locked up with significant sentences and being accused of terrorism enhancement on their charges. And, you know, as that further played out, and these people were then seeing the inside of prisons, you know, and the nuances and like censorship of their mail and unable to get books or letters at times, or having extreme restrictions on visitation, the exorbitant cost of phone calls, you know, disciplinary infractions, all these things that are like either by common conversations in the world of people who experience prison on a daily basis, or then kind of seeping into the environmental movement through that handful of people, you know, relatively tiny number of people compared to the 2.4 million or so who were incarcerated at that time. But the impact, I think, was big. And it demonstrated to me that, you know, I think environmentalists, people in the environmental circles, have something to contribute to the anti-prison struggle in this way that we have. You know, we tend to have a lot of resources comparatively, you know, that the largely middle-class environmental kind of single-issue movement, if they were to see prisons as an environmental issue and direct resources, it could be a significant piece of the struggle against incarceration. So the idea around the Prison Ecology Project and the campaign to fight toxic prisons was to sort of develop that idea and see where we could go with it. And so far, I would say we've had some pretty good luck.
Definitely.
For example, I mean, like the Sierra Club published an article on prison ecology, which the original title of the article, when it went out online, was Factory Farms for Humans.
Whoa.
And I think they probably maybe got some blowback because when it came out in print, they changed the title.
Oh, man. No, but, I could imagine the Sierra Club getting a bit of like flack for that.
Yeah,
but
it was cool. I mean, it was like, and they took it from a quote that I'd given them about that, making that analogy, you know, about the output of prisons being similar to factory farms, and that they're piling thousands of people into these warehouses, basically, and prisons very frequently have sewage and waste problems like that. But yeah, I mean, by the time it came out in print, it was cool to see the article, but a couple pages later, they also ran an article about how great you know, the sustainability in prisons initiative is, and how prisoners incubate butterflies to, like, you know. But anyway, it's going to be a struggle. It's not going to be necessarily, like, that easy. But 1.4 million subscribers and members of the Sierra Club got that issue of the magazine in their mailbox and hopefully opened it up and thought, oh, prisons have an environmental issue. You know, the Earth Island Institute had a similar article online, and they're supposedly they're working on something to publish in their print magazine. And that's, you know, they also have a pretty wide circulation internationally. That would also be a big step, you know, having these more mainstream environmental groups take positions on prison.
Is this question of what you're being told or like what information is being presented and who is presenting the information? And sometimes, you know, somebody who, like, maybe wouldn't be interested in listening to me would be interested in listening to the Sierra Club. And given the fact that, like, the United States is the number one incarcerator in the world, I think that it's really cool that prisons are being attacked on from all these different angles, like social and environmental and all these things. So I think that's awesome. Yeah. You mentioned that the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons, or FTP, which I like that, that's the acronym, is mobilizing around the, or like protesting the building of a prison in Letcher County, Kentucky. Would you mind talking briefly about what it's like in Letcher County, Kentucky, and the timeline that this federal prison is, like, planned around?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been on the table for about 10 years now, and there's a U.S. representative named Hal Rogers, who's a far-right-wing congressperson. He heads up the Appropriations Committee, and he's basically promised, you know, his backers, which are largely coal and gas industry people, that he's bringing this prison, and under the facade of creating jobs, you know, he's going to, like, dole out essentially $500 million in construction contracts to people in that region. And the environmental impact statement process started in 2013, but just last year they released the first draft of an environmental impact statement. And we decided to pull people together and try to attack that. And between several organizations, some large groups and some smaller local folks, and then a handful of individuals, we filed a really strong comment. And 3 months later, they followed up with a final environmental impact statement, which, you know, 3 months, it's a pretty narrow amount of time to go from the draft to the final. And it, to me, it was indicative that they were planning on plowing forward. And regardless of how compelling our challenge in that, like, administrative or whatever kind of bureaucracy was. So we thought that they were going to be just approving it and, you know, bringing the bulldozers. But I think it seems they also saw the building opposition. Maybe they heard that there were some lawyers getting involved. I don't know. But just last month, they were forced to reopen the environmental impact statement. Mm. And they produced a revised version, which we took as a small victory that there, you know, that there's delay happening because of opposition they're facing. And we have until May 2nd to put more letters on record. So we're doing some real simple stuff, like online petition drives that send letters to the BOP and put them on file. But really what we're gearing up for is building the foundation for a more robust and well-supported resistance to the project that's not just based in Letcher County, that's going to come from across the country, because it's a federal prison. We all have a stake. It's $500 million that supposedly came from all of us. So we're trying to pull people in some ways, alleviate the locals of Letcher County from having to be dragged into this small town jobs versus the environment kind of debate. Instead, say, you know, this is a national or even international issue of whether or not mass incarceration should continue. And we're one small piece in it, you know, and hopefully open up space for people in Letcher County to voice their frustrations as well.
It seems to me that the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons, because of all of the collaborations between, it's really possible for people from a, like, wide variety of political stances to get involved. You mentioned anarchist involvement, and there's ability for people to, you know, employ, like, what seemingly a diversity of tactics. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And awesome. I already, in the conversations that we've been having, you know, the range of discussion is pretty wide, you know, from grassroots and community organizing and sort of listening projects of meeting people in rural communities in that area that have been hit by the prison boom, and understanding it better as one aspect. And then, you know, the idea of going to DC and putting together this mass action to raise hell at the BOP office or some BOP related target in the DC area is another avenue that's being explored. And, you know, people are also already talking about, like, locally and what would it look like to support, you know, direct action campaign against construction and who are the allies there and, you know, developing relationships with them. That's already happening. And on the other hand, there talking about who's doing this sort of work, like on the alternatives at a grassroots sort of level, like what can we bring in people that have, you know, skills in supporting local and small scale agriculture, for example, and can they contribute in a meaningful way to some of the local alternative economics that are already in the works. People are, you know, small farming communities who are trying to stay in these rural areas and survive without the presence of these huge industrial monsters. So how can we support folks that are doing that work? You know, in that area, a lot of it's framed in the language of a just transition, which I think is, you know, it's valuable to understand that and figure out what we can contribute in a meaningful way. And the last thing I'll mention is the potential for decentralized direct action campaigns, I think, is also very real. And the first target that we've been pointing out to people is the PR firm that's responsible for the environmental impact statement. And this company, Cardno, exists in most every large or medium city in this country, as well as around the world. They do the PR work for most of the gas and oil industry, for most industrial expansion projects. You know, Cardno, it traces back to this company at some point. Keystone XL, for example, used Cardno. TransCanada, for the KXL project, used Cardno for their environmental impact statement. And there was actually a successful campaign to bump them off with pressure. In the end, they were removed from the process. You know, they had to find a new PR company to do that EIS because Cardno's conflict of interest was exposed through a series of lawsuits from environmental groups. So, you know, I think there's some evidence that pressure on these companies can be effective in delaying and exposing, you know, the corruption happening in this sort of process, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Tell us about the convergence. It's going to be happening June 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C. What are some things that people who are interested in going should be aware of, and what's the schedule and all that stuff, and how can people learn more about it and register?
Right now, I mean, a lot of the outreach is happening via the website, which is fighttoxicprisons.org. We're also, you know, been handing out thousands of flyers at activist gatherings and anarchist convergences, and we were at both book fairs and the Earth First gathering and a handful of local events, and some of us have been running around making sure we hit all these conferences and things that are happening to put it on people's calendar. So I think the word is getting out there about it. I think a lot of anarchists should be familiar with June 11th by now. It become an international day of solidarity with eco-prisoners and anarchists who are locked up for their actions or their ideas in some cases. So, you know, we're trying to build off that sort of tradition of organizing in anarchist circles and expand it to be about fighting prisons, not just supporting prisoners. So with that in mind, you know, there are former prisoners who are coming to the convergence to share their stories and their experiences from across lines of various struggles, you know, eco-prisoners, as well as liberation struggles from other movements. And so we're excited that that's coming together. You know, we're encouraging people to get there on the 10th. So starting the 11th early in the morning, there's going to be workshops and panels and strategy sessions, as well as, you know, music and performance. And then the evening of June 11th is a big kind of keynote speaker event, and we're trying to get local DC folks out in large numbers. We're still confirming some of the speakers. You know, Ramona Africa from the MOVE organization is going to be there. Eric McDavid, who was an eco-prisoner sentenced to 19 years for, you know, as a result of being entrapped by an FBI informant. And, you know, he was released 10 years earlier than his sentence. And I think we should give ourselves some credit for keeping that pressure on and being a part of that. And, you know, get to celebrate with him. Hopefully, you know, he's doing what he can to make it out. So he said he's planning on it the best he can. So hopefully he'll be there with us and a host of other folks, as well as other former prisoners, social prisoners or politicized prisoners that people may never have heard of, but are bringing their stories out from the inside. So they'll be present throughout the weekend. And come Monday, our plan is to hit the streets and, you know, figure out how we can ratchet up the pressure on the BOP. You know, we expect that they're going to come out with their record of decision around the same time period, meaning that the, you know, the environmental impact statement for Letcher County will be in its final phase, or, you know, in, they'll be looking to move forward, move past that point. And so we want to use that moment to really highlight the BOP and make sure they know that they'll, you know, there'll be a battle tooth and nail every step of the way. So that's what we have in mind for Monday. I think if you want more details, I suggest coming to the convergence and participating and shaping that that plan. But we plan to have an early morning, the 13th, and, you know, we'll figure out the rest of the details as we see who comes to D.C. to join us.
How many people are you anticipating?
That's really hard to say still. I mean, yeah. I think the word is still just getting out in publications, like anarchist print publications are just now coming out. And, you know, it was an announcement in the journal, the Earth First journal. I think Slingshot is running a story about it. And so we're hoping that that stuff, you know, reinforces the online outreach we've been doing. So, you know, I think we're anticipating and hoping for somewhere in the hundreds, you know, several hundred to be a part of the conference, part of the convergence. And I think what's the real kind of uncertainty is whether or not we'll be able to capture the interest of local DC residents and, you know, active participants who might decide to come out that morning and join us. And we're really hoping for that, you know, if we can create the buzz over the weekend that draws people out into the streets on Monday, then, you know, that would be great.
Yeah, for sure. What kind of response have you been getting from people like doing outreach in Washington, D.C. and in Baltimore so far?
So far, it's been good. You know, cool. Still, I feel like it's still kind of, like I said, early, although it's coming up within the next 6 weeks. You know, we're still in our early phases of making direct contact with people. You know, we've been putting it out like broadly to organizations and individuals that we're in touch with. But what we're really in the next step, and we're looking for help in this, is making individual invitations to people. And so if you're thinking about coming, you know, if you're listening to this show and wondering if you should go or not, then we hope you'll decide to come. But even more than that, we hope that you'll start inviting people you know and making the, I think, you know, personalizing the connection that so people know that their friends and comrades are going to be there, and you know, that the snowball effect starts kicking in, that the more people who hear about their folks are going, that the more they'll decide to adjust their plans to make sure they can go. So, you know, help us spread the buzz. If you do the online kind of social media thing, some of us are just kind of learning that, but, you know, there's Twitter and Facebook stuff around about it, and there's hashtags and et cetera. That's not my forte, but I know it's happening, and, or it has it that sometimes, that stuff turns out, you know, thousands in the streets. So,
yeah. Yeah. The revolutions have been organized via Twitter, weirdly enough.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oddly enough. But hopefully people will hear this or see a poster and be really stoked on going. But if people are unable to attend, is there a way for listeners to support this event, or any logistical things that you're still seeking?
First off, we're doing a fundraiser to help cover travel costs of people, specifically trying to get folks that are not the usual suspects, and making sure that former prisoners have the resources they need to get to D.C. And so we have a fundraiser up on the website, fighttoxicprisons.org. So if you can't make it, but you want to make sure other people get there, you can kick in towards that fundraiser, and that's where the money's going. If you can't go and you want to organize locally, I suggest seeking out the local Cardinal office where you live. The BOP also has 5 regional locations. So if you're feeling real ambitious and you want to try to put something together, check out the website and find out where the BOP locations are and see if you're close by. And of course, June 11th has been, you know, the day of solidarity with prisoners since I think 2004 was the first annual celebration of it. So we encourage people to continue in that tradition, do letter writing nights for eco and animal prisoners and other prisoners of allied struggles, and make sure they know that the movements that they got locked up for are still moving forward, and the fights that they were a part of are continuing, and we still value their participation. You know, that prisoners are part of the struggle, in some ways central to struggle. So, you know, I encourage people to plan local events. If you're not come to DC, you know, figure out what you can do in your local area to stir things up.
Definitely. I'm really interested in this event and this a trend that I've been noticing in like far left and anarchist political organizing, which is working in collaboration with other projects. When I was growing up and when I was coming up, it was a lot of like single issue organizations or single issue initiatives that were like doing their own thing and fighting for this one thing. But I've noticed more in like actually like the last five to seven years, people are a lot very, very much more interested in solidarity and in working together and in sharing resources. And it's really cool to see that. And I think that initiatives that are doing this like really, really, really deserve support and deserve to be interfaced with and all of these things. And so, yeah, I really like it, is what I'm getting at.
Cool. Well, thanks for having given me the chance to talk about it and you know, giving support to this effort.
Oh, gosh, absolutely. Remember, back and forth from Canada to the United States. Yeah, we hustle on the move, we do whatever it takes. And I never could have imagined I would travel so much. My brown undocumented people, y'all know that it's rough. Got gringos calling us illegals. We got indigenous blood, oh no, hold up. Must be playing, they the racist land invading, mass murder, earth betraying ones. Yo, much respect to all the natives who took time to share their stories. I can't put into words what y'all have really done for me. And look at that. Word. Before I let you go, is there any, like, we usually score the show with some music. Is there any music that you'd really like to see be part of this interview?
You know, it would be cool. Do you know the hip-hop artist Alas? She's a Savage fan.
Yeah.
Indigenous hip-hop.
Yeah, I think so. Alas.
She's planning on coming out. So you could look her up and find her stuff online or videos and stuff.
Cool.
And it might be cool to give a little shout-out to her, let people know she's coming, and check out her stuff.
And we just heard an interview with Panayoti, who is an activist working with the campaign to fight toxic prisons. Again, for more information about this campaign, you can go to and to register for the fast upcoming Convergence in Washington, D.C. on June 11th through 13th. You can visit fighttoxicprisons.org. You're also hearing the aforementioned indigenous hip-hop artist Alas with a 2014 release called Deathless. A simple YouTube search will give you the full version of this song. Yo, rest in power to the students murdered in Ayotzinapa. Pinches puercos del gobierno se dieron cuenta lo que pasa. Intentaron enterrar semillas y el país prendió fuego. No waiting for anyone to free his homies in a lonely land. Screaming fuck the police. We don't beg our oppressor. We hold court in the streets. Ferguson and coast to coast. It's open season on a pig. Fighting for our freedom is the only way we'll live. There's never been justice on stolen land. This needs to be the year the revolution began. There's never been justice on stolen land. This needs to be the year the revolution began. Was this the year the revolution began? Time will tell, time will tell. I ain't been sober like this since I was damn near 13. Hey, yo, I'm feeling so sharp, my mind's feeling so clean. See, I decided this year that I can't drink like I used to. But most of the homies always say, look at
for an excuse to pour up a cup of that white man's piss. But when you're good on the ish, you learn to tell him like this. The liquor makes you sick, them beers make you soft. The more that you drink, the more our people get lost. The liquor makes you sick, them beers make you soft. The more that you drink, the more our people get lost. But see, what really gets me heated is how proud you take off down. Bragging about how many shots you about to show me you can pound. Me that's flashbacks in mis tios, borrachos growing up, who only showed their soul in faces when they needed a buck. They'd get into the cases and then my mind would be stuck, cleaning up broken bottles and blood spilt from the fights. And that ain't even rock bottom. You don't wanna hear about those nights, but I already know what you gon' say. You're not an alcoholic, but how many of your friends are? And what could you do to stop it? This a whole other topic for a whole other song, so let me wrap it up. Yeah, let's just move it along. See, I've been running for a minute. Adrenaline's got me reckless. Try to keep up with my lyrics. Got you looking breathless. You
can you introduce yourself and situate yourself a bit? Maybe let us know a bit about why it makes sense for us to talk to you about this prisoner strike that's happening in September.
My name is Ben Turk, and I've been a prisoner supporter and advocate for like 5 or 8 years or something like that, working with guys in Ohio, but also around the country. I've been coordinating the North American AIDS Conference for the last few years. I'm a member of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of the IWW, and I've been working closely with the Free Alabama Movement and prisoners and prisoner supporters across the country to kind of coordinate this stuff.
Great. Let's jump right into it then. What are the details of this strike that's happening in September? What is this call to action all about?
Yeah, so prisoners have been fighting against, confinement and prison and all of the deprivations that they experience, as well as horrible labor conditions, which are a continuation of slavery. And that's been going on for decades, or maybe since the first prison was built. And in recent years, that has really grown. Starting in 2010, there was a very large work stoppage in Georgia, followed by huge hunger strikes across California that involved some work stoppaging as well. And then in January 2014, the Free Alabama Movement shut down all of the prisons in Alabama for about a month, which was also historically large prisoner work strike. And so a lot of the prisoners that I've been working with all over the place since then have also been resisting in various different ways. And everybody has talked about the idea of, you know, we can make this more successful if it's coordinated, if it's happening on a national level. And so I started reaching out to folks on the outside through the ABC conference and various other networking opportunities to see if we can actually support that. Because the thing that has been lacking in all of these efforts has been outside support. Prisoners are ready to do these things. They're ready to organize, coordinate, resist, take on risks themselves, but none of that achieves. It's very difficult for any of that to achieve substantive results if there's not people on the outside shining a light in on what's going on. And so we're trying to build that component of it and see whether or not we can succeed.
Okay. So the call out for this action talks about how this is a call for a nationwide prisoner work stoppage to end prison slavery starting September 9th, 2016, which is the anniversary with the uprising of Attica. And you're talking about like organizing support for this on the outside. Do you want to talk a bit more about what that looks like? I know there's been a call out that's been circulating a lot. Do you want to talk about other things that have been happening to support this call on the outside?
Yeah. We're trying to follow the strategy that was proposed and set up by the Free Alabama Movement in the document they wrote called Let the Crops Rot in the Field. And it's a multiple-step strategy based on spreading general education, making sure everybody's aware of what's going on, and then building outside support and demonstrating the various levels of outside support. And then the prisoners also developing demands and choosing tactics based on their conditions of confinement and their levels of support on the outside. And so it's really important for people to be, you know, if you're doing prisoner support at all, it's important to be reliable and to not give people false hope and get them excited about things that you then flake out on doing, because they take a lot of personal risk by getting involved in resisting in any way against the prison authorities. And so one of the things that we're looking to do is have a number of mobilizations and support actions leading up to September so that people can hold rallies and hold public events and do outreach and build momentum on the outside so that prisoners on the inside know what kind of support levels there are for them should they participate in any kind of protest and thus choose their tactics in a well-informed way.
What's your sense of how things are being coordinated on the inside? Is this mostly coming from a specific region of the country or like a specific political tendency inside? Is it kind of widespread and communication is happening in all sorts of different ways? How are people getting organized on the inside?
The most active or like ready to go people seem to be in the south and the southeast. But prisoners are dissatisfied and disenchanted everywhere. And there's differences. It seems like folks in Wisconsin, where I am now, talk about communication restrictions and solitary confinement that they experience a lot. Prisoners in the South, in Texas and Alabama, are very centered on this idea of slavery because they are not paid anything for their work unless they get, like, the good jobs. And so for them, that very much resonates with the experience, you know, in the South, in America, of slavery. But that in other parts of the country, that seems to be less attractive to prisoners, and they're more concerned with other things like their conditions of confinement and, you know, just experiences of control and deprivation that go along with being incarcerated.
So the way you're talking about this actually makes it sound a bit broader than my sense was from the call out. Is your sense that the call out is actually about more than just a work strike or something like that, and that it's also calling for a lot of other, perhaps more varied forms of resistance, both from people on the inside and people on the outside?
So a work strike is, so how prisons work in America is they are maintained by the prisoners doing forced labor. All of the floors are cleaned by prisoners, the food, the laundry, all of those things are done by prisoners who are forced to do them. And so when you do a work strike, if you manage to organize that, to get everybody to refuse to go to work and to shut the facilities down, that creates a massive crisis for that prison institution, for statewide, so you get it going on statewide. And so there's going to be serious, heavy reprisals against any prisoners who try to do that. And so the folks in Alabama and other places where they have the support and where they feel confident that they can actually do that, they also recognize that prisoners in other places are not going to be able to participate in that kind of level. And so they welcome people choosing tactics that make sense to them and letting a variety of different things occur. And for example, in Michigan recently, there have been a number of instances where people are not doing full-on hunger strikes, but they're refusing to eat the food that is provided by the state. And so the state calls everybody to the chow hall, and they just don't go. And instead, they eat their own food in the commissary. And it's a form of protest that does not create an immediate crisis for the prison administration, but it is still like a demonstration of power, a demonstration of organization, and a protest against what's going on in the prison that might not lead to as severe of reprisals against them immediately as a full-on work stoppage, or that might be easier for them to coordinate than a full-on work stoppage. So it's, the goal, the ideal, is if we could have a nationwide work stoppage, but that's pretty unrealistic to get everybody on board with something like that. So, but so they want, so the prisoners want to welcome everyone's participation on whatever level they are able to, they feel like safe and able to participate.
The prison radio show has a bunch of folks who listen to our show who are currently incarcerated in Canada. Do you have any thoughts for folks in Canada who might be looking to figure out a way to get involved? Is there ways that you think the analysis in this call out overlaps with the ways that prisons work up here?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding, and it's very incomplete, but my understanding is that the Canadian prison system is increasingly adopting a lot of the practices of the U.S.'s prison system. And so I think coordination across that border would be a really awesome and excellent thing. And I know the prisoners here, at least the ones that I know, would totally welcome that sort of thing. And there are ways for folks, for like outside supporters, to get in touch with us. You can either go to the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee website, which is iwoc.noblog.org, or the supportprisonerresistance.net website. There's contact information on both of those, and if folks in Canada are interested in joining and participating in something like this, we would be happy to share the word about that and coordinate.
Is there anything that I haven't asked that you feel like we should cover? I have like a bit of a last question too.
So the call out for September 9th has been in the works for a while, but before it was released, folks in Texas called for a work stoppage to start April 4th, and kind of in response to that, folks in Alabama have called for, they're trying to continue to build this, so they're calling for a work stoppage for the whole month of May. And so there's already prisoners who are sort of jumping on this and already kind of getting things started before the organizing that for the nationally coordinated thing, which is, excellent, and it's important that we support everybody who's doing anything, and we hope that we can have these more regional or statewide things contribute to the mobilization for the national strike in September. So there are ways on both of those websites I mentioned where you can find out how to promote those. We're hoping that people's May Day celebrations, protests, rallies, and things like that can include prisoner support and this message against slavery and spreading the word about this.
I guess my last question is about like a bit of a pitch for why it makes sense politically for people on the outside to be, organizing in solidarity with prisoners, organizing against prison in general. Like, do you have thoughts on that? I think I ask everyone in the U.S. who I talk to about this, but there's like lots of people sort of talking about the start of a mass movement against mass incarceration in the U.S. If you have any thoughts on that, and mm-hmm. what that could mean in the context of these strikes, that would also be great.
Yeah, prison affects everybody. Even those of us who have the kind of privileges that I have are affected by prison, if not directly. On a theoretical level, prison is, I think, the glue that holds capitalism together and patriarchy and white supremacy, and that if we can throw the prison system into a crisis and force it to change or hopefully abolish it, then we also make trouble for all of those other systems that oppress and control all of us. Prison is also the way that that wages are depressed for everybody. You either are competing with prisoners who they can pay little or nothing to do work through private, insourcing to private corporations, who then don't have to pay people real money, because they can get cheap labor from prisoners. And it's also a way, as an amateur economist, the labor market is just generally depressed by having a large number of unemployed people. And there are a lot of unemployed people in the United States right now. And prison is how we manage, how this our government and society manage to control and contain that large number of unemployed people, to keep them, to make sure that they continue to resort to desperate means that actually hurt each other and their communities more, rather than resorting to desperate means that challenge class hierarchies and things like that. Prison is not about fighting crime. It's about circulating crime in certain neighborhoods and containing crime in certain populations and making sure that those populations continue to struggle and benefit the rich. As far as like a national movement against mass incarceration, I've been seeing that grow, and it's interesting because I feel like I have grown increasingly aware of the issues around prison at the same time that I've seen the movement grow. So sometimes I don't know whether this is like I'm just perceiving things more because I'm paying attention better, or if there is actually like a burgeoning awareness and push against prison and these things. I'm hoping it's the latter. And I think it's especially interesting in that context because there are a lot of liberal solutions. You know, even Hillary Clinton talks about mass incarceration, and the Koch brothers and Van Jones and the Koch brothers have teamed up to address mass incarceration. And, like, dealing with the problem of mass incarceration on the priorities of rich mother is not going to solve it for the people who are actually affected by it. And so that's why it's important that we address mass incarceration on our terms and foregrounding the people who are in prison or who are in communities that are targeted by mass incarceration and making sure that their interests and needs are the ones that are being addressed instead of the interests and needs of the state budgets that just want to save money and who will find other ways of maintaining capitalism and social control and racial hierarchy and all of those things without the expensive aspect of prison. So if we can fight prison now on our terms, then we don't allow the reformers to remove it or address it in ways that keep them or even entrench their power further.
Can you do one last explanation of the logistics of the strike and timing of it and stuff?
Yeah, so September 9th, 2016, prisoners hopefully all across the country will be joining a work stoppage or some form of protest, and we are looking for people on the outside to build support, to participate in call-ins for prison resistance activities that are already going on now, as well as build awareness and organizing in your community to stand up and defend the prisoners who are near you, should they choose to participate in that strike.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRS in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like, you can send us mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat underground and independent literature. A link to Firestorm's partial catalog of books and zines, and also a full link to their schedule of events can be found online at their website at firestorm.coop. So this month, being the month of May, marks The Final Straw's sixth year being in existence. Hooray! As such, we will have an anniversary episode for you next week with original material and thrills and spills and chills, maybe. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.